Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is Wednesday, the 6th of March. Very nice to have you with us on this day. Let me introduce the panel. You got everything there?
I'm good.
All right. Yeah. You were looking like you missed something. I didn't know what happened.
Nope.
Good morning. Let me introduce everybody and we'll get started. We've got a lot to talk about. Terry Gibson is with us. He is a former New York State Senator, a SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor, a Wednesday regular, and we thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. Always happy to be here.
Always nice to have you here. Jen. Hello. Hi. Hello.
What happened?
Oh, just a little music break in there. That was all right. Yeah. Jen
Smith.
It's
my walk-on music.
Yeah, that's right. Ladies and gentlemen, bring it up. Jen Smith. No, we don't know what it is now. All right, I understand. Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith is with us. Good morning, Jen.
Good morning, Joe.
Hey, how are you? And we have Alan Shartok with us as well. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. You know, I get here fairly early in the morning. The phone rang. And I answered it as I am prone to do. And there was a lady who was very upset with the fact that her smart speaker would not play WAMC.
Oh, which one does she have?
I don't know which one she had.
Must not be that smart.
The smart one.
Yeah, I don't know. My smart speaker was playing us loud and clear this morning.
Well,
but go ahead.
So there you are. And so she was listening to us on her app. And so now our wonderful group of junior geniuses has come up with the right language. A reminder that you can engage with WAMC on our social media platforms, colon. On Facebook, it's WAMC Northeast Public Radio. On Twitter and Instagram, it's WAMC at WAMC Radio. For our news coverage on Twitter, check out at WAMC News.
All right.
So how's that sound, Joe?
Well, that wouldn't solve her problem, but yes.
No. 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 You know, to me, there's always the question as to whether there's some insidious plot on the life of WAMC, but apparently not. And we're doing all that we can to make it right.
So these social media platforms, if people want to, we put posts on throughout the day, and people can check in with those and see what's going on. It's not the station, but it tells you what's happening. We have a lot to talk about. We have about an hour to do it in, so let's do it. We'll start off by talking about there's a lot of good stories and different things, and it's one of those days you don't even know where to start. But let's start with Mike Bloomberg. Mike Bloomberg is out. Michael Bloomberg will not run for president in 2020. Instead, he says that he will work very hard to help other people running for office, I assume mostly Democrats, and that he will be a very strong supporter. He is aligned with Democrats on a range of issues like climate change and gun violence. He is also proudly pro-business, centrist in a party that has moved sharply to the left in its rhetoric and policy proposals. And he said, "I believe I would defeat Donald Trump in a general election," he wrote in a Bloomberg News column. You can write that in your column when you own the venue. Owning... And he said, "I am clear-eyed about the difficulty of winning the Democratic nomination in such a crowded field." Okay, so why did Mr. Bloomberg blink?
Well, I think part of the problem is that he's chicken. Now, quack, quack, quack. The reason that I'm saying that is because he has played with this before. And I fully expected this, by the way, and said so, that he was going to pull out because— The way we do this in this country is we run for office, we put ourselves forward, and people either say yes or no. It's never done by coronation. And I think that that's what Bloomberg, who is a terrific, would have been a terrific candidate. He's absolutely right about that. And he's also right about it would be tough to take the nomination away from a Joe Biden or from a Bernie Sanders and to run in that. But yeah, you got to put yourself forward, and he has always been unwilling to take that risk.
Well, I also wonder if this has to do with, yes, it is a very crowded field. There's a question of, do you spend that money to get into that race. But also knowing that he does have so much money, do you open yourself to the scrutiny that comes along with that? You know, exactly what we're asking our current president to do now in terms of disclosing financials and so on and so forth.
Good point.
I think, you know, with his foundation, one of the point that was really interesting to me yesterday was that he again reclaimed a strong stance on climate change and wanting to invest money there. And he's invested, I mean, millions upon millions, tens of millions of dollars, to places like the Sierra Club Foundation.
He's very generous in those regards.
The energy center he's sent through NYU that sent fellows to attorney general's offices, and which is in legislative question right now in Virginia in particular. That's something that I also wondered with this announcement as well.
He gave $100 million, I think, to his alma mater, Johns Hopkins.
It's interesting, too, that it's a case where it proves, once again, that money can't necessarily buy an election. Here's a person who has really unlimited access to all the funds he needs.
It doesn't hurt.
No, it doesn't hurt.
Like chicken soup.
It doesn't hurt. But at the end of the day, I think he used his business sense to probably do a lot of polling. They probably polled all over the country to get a sense of what people's attitude would be towards his candidacy. And I think he discovered that, as he mentioned, that winning a primary with so many other choices was just not going to be doable.
By the way, I've been thinking about getting into the race myself.
I think you should.
Yeah, because, if Trump can be president, right, why not? And everybody else is in it. And I could build my brand.
I think that now we're up to, are we up to 16, 18 with the two new governors or governor and former governor?
Governor Hickenlooper and somebody else.
Washington and Colorado.
I can see you guys are dismissing my profound announcement.
We're just trying to scope the field out for you, Alan.
Letting you know you have at least 18 competitors. But that is and there's all the question marks too of people that we Joe Biden being the main one, of course. So we will we'll find out about that. You bring up the money though. The money doesn't, but it's certainly if he uses it to work on campaigns, I mean, that will be effective.
Yeah, I'm sure that many of the candidates that will ultimately end up running would welcome his support financially. And the issues that he has supported in the past are issues that Democrats are rallying around now. So he can certainly be extremely helpful, and I'm sure he will.
I want you to know that I would welcome his help.
Well, I'll let him know.
So, I mean, do you think he backs a more centrist candidate? There's a lot of progressives in the field, too. But, I mean, that's where his
ideology is. I think he doesn't
say
a word during the primary and helps the candidate that possibly could be Donald Trump in the fall.
Yeah, I think he's on the page of we've got to beat Donald Trump. And whoever can do that, I'm going to be there to help them.
Mm. All right, let's talk about North Korea. Another big story. North Korea rebuilding rocket launch sites. Remember a week ago when those kids were meeting in Hanoi? And
Love Fest.
Yeah. And the day before, everything was great. We're going to do well. We're going to come out with a great deal. North Korea has begun rebuilding a satellite rocket launch pad, an engine test site, and an ominous sign about its attitude toward negotiations on denuclearization. The rebuilding work at the satellite launching station began between February 16th and March 2nd, according to satellite imagery, meaning it started either just before or immediately after the breakdown of a summit meeting between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in Hanoi on February 28th. The site is billed as a space launch center. North Korea has said it was being dismantled and had promised to allow international inspectors to verify that process, and a move widely cited as a sign of its good faith. In Hanoi, Trump said Kim promised not to resume nuclear missile tests. In that context, any move by North Korea to launch a rocket and pass it off as a peaceful space-related activity would probably be viewed as provocative. Meanwhile, given how much has been done at the site, it looks like more than a couple days' worth of activity, according to the managing editor of 38 North, a website devoted to analysis of North Korea.
Well, I guess the analogy that the president continues to use is one of sort of this love relationship that they have. But it seems as if his lover has gone around and stabbed him in the back.
And that's what he said. He used the word love. You're quite right.
Over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an amazing, amazing situation. Malcolm Nance sat at this very table one day when we raised this whole idea that Trump could negotiate with him personally, the art of the deal. He laughed. It was a real belly laugh. And he said, look, people have been dealing with this guy or these people for years. They tell you one thing, they do another. You can't hold them accountable. Well, turns out he was right.
That's absolutely the case. And I'm absolutely not surprised by this, especially, again, this is a country that goes to great lengths to posture. There's parades for everything. There's a big show. So, of course, when they said they're going to start denuclearization, what do? They bring in press from all around the country. They bring them to this site. And it's a show site. It's absolutely a show site. And if you really look at anyone who's been following what's been happening in the building in North Korea and has been, there are plentiful satellite images out of there. This is just one site of many. So whether this one was stayed dismantled or not would not affect really effectively the power, the nuclear power that is at this country's fingertips. It was almost sort of the equivalent of, I don't want to dumb it down or water it down too much and say they were just taking down scaffolding. But, these things, they weren't destroying them. They weren't burying them underground. They were just simply taking them apart.
And if you look at the news, the cable news stations, they always include how far those missiles can go. Mm-hmm.
They can be launched from trucks. They don't need a launch pad.
Well, they can be, but mm-hmm. they can also go to California.
Absolutely.
This morning I heard Chicago. Now, this guy ain't going to do that. The Chinese.
I don't think there's a country in this world that is going to denuclearize what they have.
Well, yeah, but no, what I mean is they're not going to
go
send
for
a missile.
Chicago.
Go for Chicago or California, because right next to them is China, or mm-hmm. as a certain other person said, China. And so what happens is you're going to. Obviously, they cannot do that unless they're insanely suicidal. So that's not going to happen.
But in all seriousness, though, it does, these types of moves do show the weakness of the Trump administration's ability to really negotiate solidly with any country. To date, it seems as if every country that they try to build some type of relationship with, it just isn't working, especially those who would be considered our enemies.
So who you got in mind?
For president?
No.
Is that what you're asking?
No. Who you got in mind of the countries we've tried to negotiate with that we have, that Trump has not been productive with?
Well, it seems that he's met with Russia, and he's met with North Korea, and he's met with China. The list goes on and on, and it seems...
And he's achieved nothing.
Nothing ever comes out of that, except for him claiming to essentially be in love with the leaders of those countries.
He likes them, they get along.
And they love him.
And they've done far more than any... He has done far more than any other president who has ever worked with these leaders in the past. What I find interesting, and I agree with you, what you just said about North Korea. The only thing I would say is that the Trump administration, it seems to be Trump. In the sense that there are many people within the administration, the people around him, who have said, if you want to make this work and if you truly want to negotiate, you have to negotiate. You have
right.
to send a team over. You have to have people who set up the infrastructure. And then you come in and you work on this long and hard. It can't be a willy-nilly thing. You show up and decide that whatever, and you walk out with a deal.
It's the downfall of a widespread micromanager. You know, he thinks he can do everything, and he's not an expert. He's not an expert in foreign policy or foreign diplomacy by any means. And then you have people in your cabinet, in your administration, who you've tasked with kind of doing this that you're not employing, and you're not on the same page. And that's going to continue to be the downfall of anything he tries to accomplish.
It's leadership by ego, and that's what his entire administration deals with on a daily basis.
I would like to point out that his numbers Trump's numbers are going up. That, you
is
know,
that true?
Yes. Oh, that is absolutely true.
I thought I just read the poll that had
no, that is absolutely true. Yeah, and it's somewhere between, you know, it's climbed upward of 45. And it's been widely reported on news stations and the rest. And, you know, look, we have an economy that is superb. We have...
For some people.
Well, yeah, no, you're right. But it's the margins there. In other words, how many people think this is good for me? And if they do think it's good for me, what are they willing to... And if they think it's not good for them, what are they willing to do about it? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the people who need to be... out there quite frequently who suffer the most are not.
Well, and also, I mean, the thing with the polls, though, is I feel that they're just about as volatile as our economic market with this president, because, again, there's so much unpredictability. Mm. And, you know, will today's announcement, will tomorrow's negotiations or tweet change, you know, both our market and people's perceptions of this current leader? I could say, yeah, that's definitely prone to happening.
NBC Wall Street Journal poll has 30% of Americans having a positive view of the 45th president. They also say that trailing whatever Democrat is put forward, he would trail from 8 to 11 points.
Well, obviously, I don't want to argue with you, Joe, but I was watching a major cable channel this morning.
Announced that. Yeah, I mean, it's just the headline I know was about the trailing of the Democrats. They have him, obviously they have his approval at 39%. This is NBC Wall Street Journal. I'm sure there's a lot of polls out, but I'm curious as to. But as you say, so volatile. I don't know what could possibly go. You wonder, because it doesn't seem to matter who, right? Like what Democrat he would be running against.
Oh, I think it matters. I mean,
In these polls.
Oh, in the polls, I see. I think it will eventually matter in the polls. It's a little too early right now because we don't know who the candidate or candidates will be. I think it's going to be a brutal race. I think that he is going to be extremely hard to beat, and I've said that all along. It's not going to be a cakewalk for anybody. Mm-hmm. And I keep going back to one of the things that Michael Cohen said during his testimony last week that has really stuck with me, and that he said that his concern was that if Donald Trump was not reelected, that for the first time in our history, we would not have a peaceful transition to a new president. And you can kind of see that playing out. You can kind of see this president saying, you know what, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying right here.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, and Terry Gibson. We'll be back.
And check out the Rasmussen poll at 47% approval.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Terry Gibson. We'll have the governor of New York State at 10 o'clock this morning, and we'll get to a lot of topics before then in the next 27 minutes. We have letters. We'll start there.
Okay, Joe, thank you. Jay Sam, right? Hey, Alan, Jared in Albany here. Just letting you know, I would definitely vote for you if you ran for president. I think a lot of other people would, too. Is anybody here old enough to remember Pat Paulson running for president?
Yes.
Yeah.
As part of the Smothered Brothers Comedy Hour.
That was cool.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Okay. And Derek says, Alan for president. If Alan becomes president, it will then be a question of whether Governor Cuomo should still insist on calling him doctor or maybe Dr. President, Alan Chartok. Love the show, from Derek. And then from Bob in Albany. Panel, it's easy to imagine the level of support that Bloomberg can offer the eventual Democratic nominee will put him in the running for any cabinet position he wants should the Dem win. With that in mind, why should he go through the agony of a full-scale presidential campaign? I don't think. Yeah, let me bring you in on this, Bob. I don't think he's going to be at all interested in being a member of the cabinet. I mean,
he wasn't entirely out of the politics game, though, so... Where he goes next is interesting.
Oh, yeah? What do you think?
I
Not that I want to fight with you, but I do. No, he's not going to be in the cabinet. I mean, I suppose if you made him Secretary of State, that would be one thing, but I would doubt very much he would do it.
Do you think he'd be good at Secretary of State?
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I think he'd be good at anything he did. He's an excellent, hardworking man who knows what he's doing. So then we heard also from Russ in Greenfield, and if Donald Trump could get away with what North Korea is doing now, meaning saying one thing and doing another, he would, huh? Anybody else get that? Because I'm not sure what it means.
No.
Thank you for that. And Reed says, Trump love. The president's, quote, love for Kim Jong-un does not coincide with conventional definitions of love, probably because narcissists are incapable of love for anyone but themselves. And that's from Reed in Bearsville, where everybody walks in the woods.
All right. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will move on to other topics, and we go to a couple of interesting things that there it is. Okay. Where we will look at the probes against the president of the United States. New York regulators subpoena Trump's insurance broker as probes of his campaign, White House, and businesses multiply. This from the Washington Post. New York State regulators have subpoenaed President Trump's insurance broker following testimony from former Trump attorney Michael Cohen that Trump exaggerated his wealth to insurance companies. Did I hear correctly that Cohen is back in Capitol Hill tomorrow?
Or today.
Today?
Yeah.
And then on Monday?
I don't know about that, but I know today.
Who's left to talk to him? What?
The Intelligence Committee.
No, they want to follow up on some of the things he said to them the other day that they weren't quite sure of, and that's why it's in confidence. But he did make a number of statements that were, you know, enigmatic, to put it mildly.
Right.
We didn't know what they meant. Talking about other investigations, talking about an investigation by the Southern District. So I have a feeling they wanted to follow up on some of that stuff.
The subpoena acknowledged Tuesday by broker Aon PLC, is that how that's pronounced? A-O-N?
Yeah, Aon. So,
signaled another line of inquiry into Trump's private business, this time by New York's Department of Financial Services. As is our policy, we intend to cooperate with all regulatory bodies, according to Aon spokeswoman Diana Mirandola, who in an email said she declined to answer further questions, saying we do not comment on specific client matters. Tuesday was a case study in Trump's new reality of besiegement as multiplying investigations by state authorities, federal investigators, and congressional Democrats began to dig into his business, charity, and presidency simultaneously. The White House rebuffed one such inquiry, telling House Democrats it would not provide documents about its process of granting security clearances, but that did not end the confrontation. It probably just delayed it. Democrats are discussing whether to demand that information under subpoena. And for Trump, other troubles were just behind that one. Another committee of House Democrats said it was preparing to ask for about 10 years of Trump's tax returns. Trump has declined to release his tax returns, unlike other presidents in the past.
I can't wait to talk to our Richie Neal, one of my favorite people in the world, by the way, who is the congressman from our district, Jen and mine, and who has been assiduously careful about preparing to ask for those tax returns and to making sure that it's done the right way. There are a couple of opportunists out there, political opportunists with a lot of money, who are trying to make him into the bad guy, but he's doing exactly the right thing. He's been waiting on the Mueller report and in preparing, and he will, preparing to ask for the tax returns. He's making sure that the rationale and everything else is there. And if you don't like that, then you could absolutely join the lumpen proletariat. Lumpen to leave it.
I see. Well, I think what's interesting about this story is that it's yet again another example of how New York State, Donald Trump's home state, is continuing to be one of the biggest thorns in his side.
Yeah, you bet.
And that between our attorney general and between our various federal state agencies and state legislature, everyone is looking for ways to try to get information out of this person as to how his business dealings were actually dealt with here in New York. And we're finding out that there's a lot of things that he did that are worthy of investigation. And it was another New Yorker that asked questions during the testimony that actually provoked this in the first place. It was AOC that actually asked this question.
AOC asked the question. To the Times that was there. One of the good things AOC did last week. Yep. She's done some things which raised a few people's eyebrows in the meantime.
And just on a a trivia note, the individual that is making this inquiry about the insurance is an appointee of our governor. It's an agency that reports to our governor. Mm-hmm. It's an individual that used to actually be the chief counsel to the governor. So I'm actually happy to see that our own governor is going after this president as well.
The president wrote on Twitter on Tuesday. Presidential harassment is what he called, all capitals and an exclamation point, just to make the point. As the inquiries multiply, Trump's tweets got short. He is viewing all of these inquiries as an effort by his enemies to overwhelm him. At an afternoon event at the White House, Trump told reporters the Democrats had hurt their chances of working with him on policy issues. It's too bad because I'd rather see them do legislation, Trump said, instead of doing infrastructure, instead of doing health care, instead of doing so many things that they should be doing, they want to play games. The Trump Organization declined to comment Tuesday. Trump still owns his business, although he has handed day-to-day control of it to his sons, Donald Jr. and Eric, and to longtime executive Alan Weisselberg.
And if you believe that, I got a bridge I want to sell you.
Well, I mean, first of all, which president doesn't get harassed? Show me a president who's never been harassed in his life. Secondly, just in terms of diplomacy and building policy, then be the leader that rises above. But we know that's not going to happen either. I think what's interesting as this probe and investigation kind of continues is if you look at that list of 81 people, a lot of the people who are being looked at are those who were ousted sort of by Trump and former cabinet members. A lot of companies, groups like the NRA, I think is really interesting. So what we will actually get out of this will be interesting. I think there's just myriad legal battles ahead. There's going to be a lot of shuffling and redacted documents flying around. But they're also, I think, on the 14th, one of the people named is going to be up before the Intelligence Committee in another open hearing, which will be interesting. So I will be curious to see what we'll get from these open hearings, and will that lead to more things that then can be pulled onto the table?
Mm. I think the president's tweet there, it just again points to his lack of understanding or interest in how government works, and that he has a role in government too. His role as the leader of the country is one that if he wants to see infrastructure be a priority, then he should take the lead on that and begin to carve out a path to help show the legislature what he's willing to support and what he's not willing to support. I mean, here in New York State, we have urgent infrastructure needs. Mm-hmm. And so to see this,
including the subway.
Well, that's part of it, right? Subway, bridges, tunnels.
And this very morning, Cory Johnson, who's the speaker, who probably thinks he's going to be the next mayor in New York City, has announced that the mayor should be in control of the New York City subway system. Interesting.
Well, they can debate
that. Thought
I
just mentioned that.
Well, no, it's important, but that subway, the various tunnels and bridges that so many New Yorkers rely on to get to work every day, and highways, they are in desperate need of federal funds, and this president is tweeting out tweets about harassment instead of actually leading the way and helping his own state.
Well, and I think that there are also some really big claims and sort of mid-campaign promises that were listed in the much controversial State of the Union address, whether it was funding for cancer research to the tune of, I think, $500 million, rather. Fighting against AIDS was listed. I think, he did do some good things this week, like looking at veteran suicide and signing an executive order towards looking at that issue more. That I don't think anyone can dispute that's an issue that needs to be addressed. How that happens, when that happens, and what funding will actually come to fruition for that is a whole other story.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will go to other stories. I do want to get in the story about the FDA head resigning. Also, the House anti-Semitism resolution that is coming up. We'll go to those issues. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Terry Gibson on the panel. Governor Andrew Cuomo coming up at 10 o'clock. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support for WAMC.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion on this Wednesday. A lot going on, so we'll get to it and, continue, I should say. Let us talk about the FDA head resigning. This is a really interesting story, or at least I thought it to be. The FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb has resigned, who was fighting teenage vaping. And so the commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, known for his aggressive efforts to regulate the tobacco and e-cigarette industry, said on Tuesday that he would resign at the end of the month. The reason he gave was?
Wanted to spend more time with
exactly,
his wife
and family. Exactly, Alan. Thank you very much.
In Westport, Connecticut.
And
I know about Westport, Connecticut.
And his weariness with commuting to see his wife and three children, who have remained in Westport. But his announcement caught many in Washington and the industries he regulates by surprise and raised questions about whether his push to reduce teenage vaping and lower nicotine levels and ban menthol cigarettes will continue in an administration that generally has a hands-off approach to business.
At least hands-off. But his big thing, Joe, that he is really under attack for is trying to lower drug prices. That is really what's got his insider group crazy with him. Now, you'll remember that Donald Trump said when he was running for president he was going to bring drug prices down. He was also going to bring the national debt down, which is now at historic highs. So, So I think he was, and you know, everybody assumed that because he had been a drug company insider, that it was a safe pick for Trump. But he turned out to have a decent streak in him and to go for it. And mm-hmm. for that, he deserves thanks.
So, do you think he was pushed?
Absolutely.
I would think so. I think so.
I think between the tobacco lobby, which is enormously powerful, and mm-hmm. the pharmaceutical lobby, which is enormously powerful, I think that they were putting enormous pressure on federal representatives in the House and in the Senate, and probably even people at the state level. And I think they were all chiming in and putting pressure on his office, and they didn't like what he was doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that he felt the pressure and said, you know, enough of this. I'm going to go back and see my family.
I know we're not in the age of common sense anymore, but it seems to me, as the chair of the FDA, just hear me out, that if you speak out against kids using nicotine, tobacco, and e-cigarettes, that seems like a fairly reasonable thing
can
to...
Can we throw that word out there?
Yeah.
As, by the way, every Surgeon General has
just
been doing.
It's right. It seems like... I know...
Rissy Everett Koop when you
need
it.
Right.
Yeah. Tiki. Yes.
But I think it is. For something that, you know, is an issue that I think most common sense folks can get on board with, schools are already on board with. Clearly, the advocates who are stunned by his departure were on board with, you know, he had social support. So you have to just speculate with, you know, some validity that this is nothing but a being muscled out.
It's, you know, the vaping industry, tobacco industry is enormously profitable to many, many people and organizations. And he was a threat to that, as well as we know with the pharmaceutical industry. So I have no doubt that he was pressured out, and it just reached a point to where it was not possible for him to come to work and work effectively anymore.
Meanwhile, the president said he was still very fond of him. For
well,
those are
the, that's the kiss of death right there.
We know how that goes.
Also, there's a House anti-Semitism resolution. The House's anti-Semitism resolution exposes a generational fight over Ilhan Omar. You will remember this story, a formal commendation of condemnation of anti-Semitism that is up for a vote in the House this week has touched off a furious debate between older House Democrats and their young liberal colleagues over whether the Representative Omar is being singled out for unfair treatment over her statements on Israel.
An American jury, by the way, Joe. Let's be fair about this. It isn't only Israel. I have grave problems with Netanyahu myself. Really grave problems in what he's been doing. But when you say, basically, that American Jews owe their primary allegiance to Israel and not to the United States, that's a pretty sweeping statement and I think a pretty stupid one.
So what? So progressives of the House and their allies have rallied to the defense of Ms. Omar, a freshman Democrat from Minnesota and one of the first two Muslim women elected to Congress who was hailed as a trailblazer. Speaker Nancy Pelosi told top Democrats on Tuesday evening that the resolution would also include language condemning anti-Muslim bias as well, a move advocated by the Congressional Progressive Caucus. So what are they? What are they trying to do here?
Well, no, I think that's correct. I mean, I think, you know, if you take on any group and if you try to stigmatize them, it's correct to say, you know, we think there are a lot of Muslims in America and they deserve protection and Jewish people, but you don't go starting to attack any of them. And I think it's wise to include that
But I feel like it's a little bit hasty in that. You know, we're going to throw in an anti-Semitism clause and we're going to throw this anti-Muslim clause when we know we have a big problem with things like, you know, racist inspired language, you know, just hate speech across this country. And, you know, if you're going to make a move, make something a little bit bolder than that. I think she, you know, I agree that, you know, making a sweeping generalization statement like that is not fair, but I also think that I also think the situation is different than the senator's name fails me right now, but the guy who was, you know, really saying some white supremacist stuff, who actually was censured in the
House.
I think it's what she's saying is a little bit different. Context, and she has been apologetic, unlike that guy.
Well, wait a second.
Although she was apologetic, and then
the first time,
and then she went and said it again.
But I think that's so. I think this is going to come up more, and I think if you're going to address it, then you do have to come up with some consistent rules and sort of ways of dealing with this. We have one of the most diverse group of leaders in Congress right now, and they've got a very ranging a set of ideals. So if this comes up, you know, what is the fair way to keep everyone in check and say, like, this is right, this is wrong, this is what you need to be held accountable to?
But when somebody says something, and I couldn't agree with you more about the racist issue in this country, we have a country that is filled with racist thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I know that people who have been articulating those in the Congress and other places have been wildly criticized and have come up for tremendous, approbation on the part of some of the people who are out there. However, there is a tremendous amount of anti-Semitism in this country.
Absolutely.
Always has been. And when somebody takes a match and tries to light that fuse, it really goes too far as I'm concerned. Hey, I'm an American Jew. I have to say that Netanyahu is not my cup of tea, and I've said it over and over again. But that doesn't make me pay feasance to Israel as opposed to my love for this country.
You also have to wonder, to what point does it go to? I mean, what is the purpose? What problem is it solving here in this this country. It's, you know, I guess maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I like for my elected representatives to go to Washington and actually try to solve problems, to try to help make life better for everyone. And so when you get into any type of attack on another individual, on another religion, which, by the way, politics and religion, they just don't mix well. You know, they're like oil and water. And anytime you go down that path, it almost always ends badly. And so, you know, I'm not sure if this resolution is really going to resolve anything. We do have one of the most, I think, the most diverse Congress that we've had in the history of this country. And I think it's a natural evolution to begin to see different points of view that have really been silenced in the past because there was no one there to represent them. Mm-hmm. So now you have a collision of what used to be primarily a bunch of old white guys sitting around and making an awful lot of racist comments throughout the history of our country.
Yeah.
Well, now you've got a lot of other people coming in and expressing their points of view, and it's rattling.
Right. Two wrongs don't happen to make a right.
No, though. I don't. I agree with you. I agree with you. But I think it is a natural evolution of when you begin to put what is now really a real melting pot into our country.
Yeah, I think you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez makes a good point when. Again, you know, the president wasn't censured for calling places S-hole countries and
he got an awful lot of negative response
and so,
to that.
And with everything that's going on with the border wall too. So it's like what is the standard of you know, creating policies and creating an effective resolution around this issue? Again, I don't think what she said was appropriate for someone in her position at all. And she's got to deal with that. But at the same time, if you don't have a standard that's been set on how to respond to when anyone says anything anti-Semitic, anti-Latino, anti-Muslim, you know, what do you do with this? And this is a grappling point for, you know, not just this issue at hand, but for the entire country.
You know, one of the biggest decisions you have to make when you're elected to public office is that you have to decide if you're going to be a legislator, meaning to build coalitions, to work in a cooperative way with those who oppose your ideas and try to win them over, or are you going to be an activist for a particular set of issues? And they're two very different things. And a lot of elected officials go in and they just become full-time activists, and they don't ever actually really accomplish that much because they make so many enemies of the people that they actually need to help them pass legislation that they become really inefficient as legislators.
That's all. Remember that everybody has a base. Donald Trump has a base. Somebody who gets elected in a particular congressional district has a base, and they make an assessment that this is what's going to pay off for them.
Do you think that Ilhan Omar faces should face like greater reprimand?
No, not necessarily. I'm not happy with it, as I have just expressed. I don't like it. I think sometimes when you create too much of a censure or too much of a reprimand, you basically draw lines that aren't healthy.
Just for purposes of completion, I guess, Donald Trump, the president, did inject himself in the debate yesterday, which only inflame things, but here we go. He wrote on Twitter, Representative Omar is again under fire for her terrible comments concerning Israel. Jewish groups have just sent a petition to Speaker Pelosi asking her to remove Omar from the Foreign Relations Committee. A dark day for Israel.
She won't do that.
I think
she won't do that. And
that
in my opinion,
for Israel than
and
that.
In my opinion, she shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, the most unqualified person in the country to comment on what other people say is this president.
You are so right.
All right. We're going to go over to news. We'll take a break. Governor Cuomo has asked for an opportunity to speak at 10 o'clock or 10:05. So he should join us right after the newscast. We'll get to all of that. Jen, Terry, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
It. And we'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Governor Andrew Cuomo is on our line 11 to be exact, to talk to Dr. Alan Chartok. And good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
Good morning, Alan, and go to it.
Okay. Hi, Gov. How you doing?
How we doing today, Doctor?
Okay. There you go again. I understand you're traveling to the Building and Construction Trades Council Winter Conference in Florida. Lucky you. It was 11 outside my house this morning, and, you know, how dare you? In the first part of your term, You never liked to travel out of state. Now, you got people's tongues wagging because it sounds like, you know, you might be running for president.
No, actually, I'm fleeing President Trump's salt tax reform to New York, and I'm moving down to Florida. No, the Building Trades Council is meeting there. The building trades are very important, and I need their help in this budget. This is a tough budget, as you know, Alan, and everybody's lobbying for their cause, which is the way. And a big part of the budget for me is the construction component, the roads, the bridges, the capital construction. It has been the best thing, one of the best things I think we've done in this state, new airports all across the state, et cetera. It's also one of the first things to get cut from the budget. That's why we wind up in the trouble we're in, right? The first thing to cut is the preventive maintenance, the reconstruction, et cetera. So I need their support, and I want to go down and talk to them about it. Because this budget is going to be about the money. This is unlike any other budget that I've done where the revenues were coming in and we were strong financially. And when you have funding, it solves a lot of the problem, political problems for the local politicians. We don't have the money. And that's what's going to make this budget challenging. And I want to make sure we have the funding for the necessary things. And it's human nature that we just preventive maintenance, repairs, construction, that just gets dropped. That's why we're in the trouble we're in at the MTA. It's human nature. We all do it. I did it. I get home the other day to my house in Westchester. There's no heat. The house is like 40-something degrees. It was like 11 o'clock at night. I get in bed, kind of bundle myself up, call the serviceman. He comes, he fixes it. The next day, he gives me a big bill, and he says, well, you were supposed to change this filter, and you didn't do this service, and you didn't do this. You know, it's working.
Well, you don't have a thing? You don't have a, you know, a generator?
No, I don't have a generator.
Well, we have a generator. Why can't you have a generator?
I take that back. I have a small generator, but it was actually the boiler itself wasn't firing.
Oh, I see.
And apparently there was a whole maintenance schedule that I hadn't done, and that caused all sorts of damage. But it's human nature. You know, you just you don't do those types of things. It's easy to cut it out of the budget. And that's why I'm speaking to the building trades.
Okay, so now, look, Tom DiNapoli, the comptroller, a man I have great respect for, has now come up with a $190 million higher number. So for all our Massachusetts and Connecticut and, you know, Rhode Island and other people who are listening, the number is terribly, terribly important in this state because that's how much, you know, you're going to need. And Tom DiNapoli has come over you. You expected him to come even more conservative than your number, didn't you?
Yes. Well, that was what the, if you listen to the economic forecasters, the independent economic forecasters, they were all very conservative in their estimates. But what the controller did, remember what the frame was. Let's call our number zero, right? The legislature was 900 more than my estimate.
Right. 900 million.
And yeah, so I said 900 million, that's crazy. We had a legal deadline of Friday to reach a consensus or it goes to the controller. When the legislature says the governor walked away from the table on Friday night, there are laws that govern the budget process. And by law, if you don't have an agreement Friday, it automatically goes. So nobody walked away from the table. It's a functional law. But so they were 900 above. We were zero. The controller comes in at 190, which is obviously a lot lower than the 900. But the controller also says, however, there is instability in the economy, and we think we should increase the reserves, what they call the rainy day fund, increase the reserves. Yeah, so 190 more, but you have to increase the reserves. All right, so we'll put the 190 into the reserves, and we're right back at my revenue estimate. And the problem is, what it's signaling is, there is no money. I ain't got no money, honey.
Yeah,
right?
But first of all, do you think that the controller, based on some of your past, you know, relationship with him, was sticking it to you? Do you think that was possible?
No, I don't think. No. I don't think that's how he operates.
No.
You know, I think even if we go home at night and we take little pins and put it in little dolls, I don't think professionally we would operate that way.
Okay, so I saw a story in the paper today that said New York is now the official highest tax state in the nation. That's got to hurt a little bit, doesn't it?
Hurts a lot. What people fail to realize is our state competes with every other state. Businesses and people shop states like they never did before. And they will shop. I mean, I have businesses call up all day long, and they say, I'm opening a new shop. I can go to North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida. They're offering me this. You have the highest tax. What do you offer? The Amazon deal, even with the slight tax break we gave them, they were still going to pay the highest taxes in the country coming here. So, yes. It hurts, and it's a caution for this state, aggravated by what Trump did and that SALT tax reform, which, Alan, there is nothing more important to me as governor of the state, and there should be nothing more important to every person in this state than getting that repealed. All this budget stuff is garbage compared to the damage of SALT. And that's my priority, and that's where I'm going to spend my time. But yes, it is a real problem.
Okay, so I was fascinated this morning when I read that New York City Council Speaker Corey Johnson has a plan to have the city take charge of the subways. Now, let's face it, Corey Johnson has risen to be the Speaker of the City Council. They're term limited. I'm sure he would love to be mayor. So now he's saying the mayor should be the head guy in the subways. So that's not surprising, I suppose. And it would take away the control of the subways from the MTA, give it to the mayor. What do you think?
First of all, you know, the New York Times loves to write stories that are sometimes loose with the facts. The New York City owns the subway system today. They lease it to the MTA. The lease can be canceled on 1 year's notice. Just cancel the lease. You don't have to take it over. You own it. Just cancel the MTA lease. All the hiring is done through the New York City Civil Service system. Why hasn't a mayor taken it over? There are about 10 billion reasons, and that's the $10 billion the state gives to the MTA, primarily New York City Transit Authority, between operating and capital. If New York City took it over, they take it over. They don't get the $10 billion in state funding.
Well, they'll want it, won't they? I mean, they'll say, come on, Governor, it's not your money. It's the taxpayers' money. So we give us the $10 billion and we'll have the mayor run the thing, just like you give a lot of money to education.
No, you own it. It's yours. You pay for it. God bless you. Look, we fund Buffalo Transit, Rochester Transit, Albany Transit. We don't subsidize a local transit system or a regional transit system anywhere in the state to the tune of what we do with New York City, because it's the MTA and the state has participation. You want to own it? It's yours. God bless America.
Well, let me just pursue that, if I may, sir, a little bit and say, You have spoken in the past about the advantage of somebody, you know, being the sole sort of responsible agent in one of these things, and then you hold them responsible. So in New York City, for example, we gave that power to the mayor to fix the education system. We took it away from that Board of Education, which was moribund and everything else. Why wouldn't that work here?
Yes, but New York City education is primarily funded by New York City. The state provides assistance the way they do with every local school district, but it's primarily funded by New York City. You want to take over the city subway system and you want to pay for the New York City subway system? God bless you. You want the state to take it over? And by the way, the state pays the lion's share of the funding.
Exactly.
Last capital plan, we paid $8 billion. The city paid $2 billion. Because it's a state agency. But if you want to take it over and you want to pay, that's an option. You can, and this, by the way, you don't need state approval. Just call up the MTA today and say, we're canceling the lease. Here's your 1-year notice. And then pay the bill.
Governor, one of the things we haven't been hearing much about lately is ethics reform. We know that, you know, there's always ethical issues. People get greedy. People do stupid things and hurtful things. Is the legislature dragging their heels on ethics reform?
No, I don't think they are. I think it's, you know, there's only so much time to talk about things. I think the primary thrust is going into the budget. Bail, you hear a lot about criminal justice reform because I've said we can't do a budget without criminal justice reform. We can't do it without a permanent property tax cap, which is your point, highest taxes. And my point, Trump just raised those property taxes. And you have to have a way to fund the MTA. Marijuana, if they don't do that in the budget, that's going to be a problem because marijuana also generated revenue. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about the MTA, not to get in the weeds, congestion pricing would raise about $15 billion.
Congestion pricing for the people in Massachusetts means if you live below 60th Street, you get charged on your easy pass for going bringing a car in that area.
Yes. The toll, let's call it the toll increases for the MTA, that are called congestion pricing would be about $15 billion. The capital plan is about 30, 40, you know, we have to do a forensic audit, but it's somewhere in that range. So congestion pricing alone only gets you half the way there. We then added the internet sales tax and marijuana tax. If you don't have marijuana, I'm not confident they're going to do it after the budget. You'd need another funding source, which is either cash on the barrel, and we don't have much cash.
You'd have to raise taxes.
Or you'd need another tax increase, like a pied-à-terre tax, to substitute for the marijuana. So this gets very complicated. And again, the political pressure is, why I'm going to the building trades, everybody wants money. This is a legislature that just went through a campaign year. What they said in running their campaign is, I promise you this, I promise you this, I promise you this. Now all those political IOUs are put on the table. So it is about the funding. That is the challenge on this budget. The temptation is then, well, we'll just inflate the revenue estimates. We'll say that we think we're going to get more money. I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing that. You know, I'm very proud I got budgets on time. The challenge this year is get it right. And what? I'm not going to play games with the numbers.
By the way, what's wrong with a pied-à-terre tax? Somebody comes in, rents an apartment for or buys an apartment for $125 million, something like that. Why not charge them, make them pay through the nose?
Look, in a perfect world, given the environment we're in, you wouldn't raise taxes. Because of what you said, highest tax state, Trump just increased our income taxes and our property taxes. We're at a very fragile state. Having said that, you do need to fund the MTA. If you don't have marijuana done, a pied-à-terre tax, which is basically second residence over $5 million.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That, I think, is the least objectionable tax. And if you don't have marijuana, I don't know that you're going to have much of a choice, because the congestion tolls raise $15 billion. Let's say you need $30 billion. That's a big gap that you have to make up, which, by the way, would be the responsibility of New York City if they take it over, which would make our life a lot easier.
Governor, why? Just why? Let's keep it simple. Is New York number one in terms of how much taxes it costs?
Because we provide many services that other states don't.
Maybe we shouldn't.
Well, we believe in the services we provide. We fund education more than any state in the United States of America, with twice the national average.
But without the results that we should have.
That's a different discussion.
All right.
We provide health care for people who can't afford it, and a higher level of health care than other states provide. And we're proud of it. That's what makes us the progressive capital. But you want to have the best education or spend the most on education, not have the best education system. Spend the most. You want to provide more for health care than any other state. You have to pay for it.
Okay. Mike Bloomberg is not going to run for president, he says. Is that, is he chicken? I mean, what's going on here?
I don't know what his calculus is. Chicken, I don't know that it's...
A good word.
You get to a point where Mr. Bloomberg is where I am. Life gets a little simpler, And you sort of say to yourself in the morning, what's the right thing?
Yeah.
What's the right thing?
Well,
God gave me a certain amount of time. What's the best way to use it? How do I best help in this situation? I don't think the question is, what's my ambition? What do I need for me? If you're thinking about what you need for you, you are a bottomless well. And if you're staring down that well, it will never be filled. I think you get to a point where you say, how do I best help? And especially when you see the planet spinning out of control. And I think he's saying the best way I can help is not to run myself, but to help elect the right person.
Well, but he wanted to run. We all know he wanted to run. He told people he wanted to run. That's not the problem. The problem is we don't coronate presidents. You got to run. You got to put yourself out there. All the consultants and all the polls and all the Humpty Dumpties don't work. You got to do it. And, I think he's a terrific guy, a good candidate. I'm a little disappointed that, he hasn't figured that out for himself, walked down the staircase.
Well, maybe he thinks he is a terrific guy, but he couldn't win the election.
Yes, maybe that is true.
That would be a fly in the ointment.
that's absolutely true. So now let's go here to say you are doing this interview, right? You're doing this interview, and the question for me is, what is it that you would like to ask? Have me ask you. What question would you like? Because I'm willing to do it.
What is the most important thing that you can do as governor to help the state? I would say it is repealing SALT, which I'm going to undertake a full-time campaign to do that. I think it is helping to remove this president from office in 2020, because I believe he is a national, if not international, threat.
And if Biden doesn't come in, will you go in? If that's what it would take, if Biden doesn't come in, your friend, would you run?
It's not just that he's a friend. He happens to be a friend.
Right.
And friendship is important. I've worked with him for many, many years. I worked with his son who passed away. Right. We were both attorneys general together. I believe he has of this field, he is the best qualified, and I believe he probably has the best shot to win this crazy primary process and then beat the president.
I hate to agree with you, but I agree with you. Okay.
So if I don't get to, because I don't believe that any of the ifs are reality based.
Do you ever worry? You said if you ran for president, that you would, you know, lightning bolt might be thrown out by the heavens and hit you in the head. You know, sometimes I feel that there's a little bit of equivocation going on. So do you ever look up?
I have no equivocation on this situation. I have plenty of equivocation in life, but not on this situation. I know Joe Biden very, very, very well. It's not just hearing a couple of speeches and making a
decision. Yeah, but cutting to the chase, as he told you, he's going to definitely get in and run.
Well, you know I can't. That's such an unfair question.
Why is that?
Because you know I can't talk about the conversation, conversations.
Okay, then I'm going to take that as a yes.
You can take it however you want to take it, but that's not fair either. You know,
why not?
Because you can't, just because I say I cannot tell you it was a private conversation, you can't then just assume what the conversation
was. Yes, I
can. I mean, you can.
Yes, I can. I'm going to do it.
Okay, then that's what you have that right, because you are a journalist and I'm powerless here on the end of the telephone. So, yes, you can do that.
Okay, and if you get to be president of the United States, if you were going to be president of the United States, would Chris Cuomo have to quit his job?
Well, that's an interesting question. I am sure Chris Cuomo has sat there and thought about, oh, does my career take a hit if my brother runs? It is a serious problem for Chris Cuomo.
Well, we only have 2 minutes.
More of a problem for Chris than for me, by the way.
Well, I got to say really quickly, you know, you've interviewed him he's interviewed you as governor on CNN. How does that go? You're sitting across from each other.
Well, first of all, we've done it a few times. We put on the screen Chris Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo. He said, this is my brother. He's there with his a large nose. I'm there with my large nose. It's unmistakable. And still they get complaints that say they should have said they were brothers.
Yeah. I know about that. I know about that. Hey, listen, you know, we are very pleased that you come on and you talk to us and that you choose us and you honor us. It means a great deal to us. And I want to thank you so much for doing it, Governor. Good luck on that Florida trip and soak up some of those rays for me, okay?
I will. And one point, sure. Alan, the reason I think your interviews are helpful to the communication process is you have history and you have knowledge and you have wisdom. And
uh-oh,
so much of the journalism today comes without context, comes without history, and comes without a depth of knowledge. You know, they think because I read it in a tweet, that's enough. I had a conversation with a reporter yesterday who wrote something and said, well, the governor says this. I said, yeah, but there are still facts. It's not that I said it. Do the research. Find out the facts. Find out the history. And we're losing that as a society in general. And you bring that. You are probative. You can be very annoying at times. But you are a—
I try.
You are a great journalist, and that's why I talk to you.
Governor Cuomo, thank you so much. We'll see you soon. Thanks again.
Thanks.
One which killed a doctor. The Brazilian president Jair Bolsonaro has provoked national controversy by posting an obscene video of two carnival revelers saying he wanted to reveal the truth about the festival. He suggested such scenes were becoming normal. A British-led team of scientists have begun a 3-year mission to explore the Indian Ocean to assess the effects of global warming. And that's the latest. BBC News.
Support for WMT comes from Bromley, Vermont's Sun Mountain, helping families make memories since 1936. Bromley offers diverse terrain, winter activities, lodging, and more. Bromley.com. Francis Morris Violins, makers, dealers, and restorers for 40 years. Graduate of Mittenwald, Member American Federation of Violin and Bowmakers.